Hey, I'm Karen Hartglass. Thank you. Thank you for being you. Thank you for joining me here today on It's All About Food. And I promise you today, as in every program, you will agree with me that it is indeed all about food. Everything is all about food, at least in my house. And I want to bring on my guest who happens to join me all the time in my house, my life partner, the co-founder of Responsible Eating and Living, our nonprofit organization, which is also all about food, Gary DeMattei. He's an actor, a producer, a director, a chef, a great cook, a wonderful guy, my muse and inspiration, and I hope the comic relief in this program. Gary, thanks for joining me.
I will be the comic relief, that's for sure.
Okay, great. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm in paradise. I'm in Northern California looking out this beautiful window at pine trees and oak trees and beautiful grounds and a swimming pool. Very lucky to be here. House sitting for a family member and just enjoying it. How are you?
I'm great. I'm sitting in a similar space. This house, fortunately, is big enough so that we can be in very different places at the same time.
Yeah, so there's no feedback. And that was a food joke. Oh, sorry.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, I'm excited about the show today because we're going to talk a lot about getting back into the kitchen.
That's right. Find Your Kitchen. That's the name of this particular episode. Find Your Kitchen.
I've got some great ideas. I've got 12 great ideas, but we'll get to that later.
Okay, let me just say why I wanted to do this program today, what inspired me. I like reading the New York Times.
Yes, who doesn't?
I read the New York Times. You don't have to be a New Yorker to read the New York Times.
No, not at all.
I also like supporting the New York Times. It's one of the few newspapers that are left today that I like.
Right.
I don't agree with everything, but I'm glad they're out there.
Right. And you really shouldn't agree with everything. You should have your own opinion about things. But they at least give you some unbiased points of view, or maybe some people think they're biased, but
yeah.
I'm biased.
And as you know me, Gary, I do have my own opinions.
No. Do you really?
Yeah.
You don't have your own opinion, do you? Yeah, no, you do. You really do. You're very, very opinionated.
I am. And I'm happy to be opinionated. Okay,
yeah.
So I want to bring up a blog writer that's on the New York Times, Jane Brody. Everybody's heard of Jane Brody, haven't you out there? You all know who Jane Brody is? Maybe not. Gary?
Is she related to John Brody, the quarterback, Hall of Fame quarterback that used to throw for the 49ers?
I have no idea.
No. Oh, Jane Brody. No, she spells her name with a Y at the end instead of an I.
Yeah, there you go. Brody. Jane Brody is an American author on science and nutrition topics. She's written a number of books and extensively for the New York Times as its personal health columnist, which appears weekly in the paper's Science Times section. She's also been called the High Priestess of Health by Time magazine.
And do you always agree with Jane Brody, Karen?
Absolutely not. I remember when her nutrition book came out decades ago, and I thought she really was somebody, but she is somebody. We're all somebody.
This has turned into a Marx Brothers movie.
Boom. But I don't agree with a lot of what she says. But I liked something in her blog this week, which inspired this program today. And the title of the blog is called Rediscovering the Kitchen and
Yay.
Other Tips for Heart
we
Health.
Love that. That sounds like you. Sounds like Jane copied you, because I hear you say that all the time.
I always say, find your kitchen.
Find your kitchen.
Find your kitchen.
Well, that's kind of like rediscovering your kitchen.
Exactly.
Okay.
So before we get into finding and rediscovering our kitchen, I just wanted to mention in this blog, she talks about a new study and the latest report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There was a new report published in JAMA Cardiology, and it covered the years from 2000 to 2014, where they concluded that deceleration in the decline of all cardiovascular disease and stroke mortality rates have occurred since 2011. What does that mean? That means that the risk of these diseases, mortality rates are going down, but the rate at which they're going down is slowing. So it's leveling out. And the study said if this trend continues, strategic goals for lowering the burden of cardiovascular disease set by the American Heart Association and the Million Hearts Initiative may not be reached.
Wow. That's an interesting discovery.
It is. And we all know here at It's All About Food and the Progressive Radio Network that cardiovascular disease is a food disease. It is reversible and preventable by choosing nutrient-dense plant foods, whole foods, minimally processed foods, and we at Responsible Eating and Living show you how to do that deliciously. But Jane Brody ends her blog with the following, which brings me to a final recommendation of my own. Rediscover your kitchen, no matter how busy you are. Finding time to prepare healthy foods for yourself and your family should be a top priority.
Well, good for Jane.
Good
I agree.
For Jane. Yeah, we yeah. agree with that. Thank you, Jane.
I mean, we're all about that at Responsible Eating and Living. We're all about getting you back into your kitchen and giving you great recipes to do that as a starting point, not as an ending point, because I think our recipes are, there's a lot of different degrees of difficulty that our recipes have.
Yep.
And some of them are extremely easy to prepare. Others are a little more difficult, require a little more skill.
And you could kind of
sift through them and see what works for you. And it's very important to start with the basics when you get back into your kitchen.
I want to reference Dr. David Katz. I interviewed him once on this program. I also appeared on the same Dr. Oz program that Dr. Katz was on. And he has a book out called Disease Proof. And the one thing I really liked in what he said is that preparing food is a skill. It's a skill that everyone can learn, but it takes time. And it's just like learning to crawl and then learning to walk and then learning to run. And
Hopefully not through any of the food that you've dropped on the floor, but yes, absolutely.
Ew.
That wasn't funny. That was just a little icebreaker.
Oh. Yeah. And I want to say that my priorities have changed. I remember when I was a Girl Scout decades ago to get one of the badges on my sash was a cooking badge, and what we were required to do, it was one of the first things I learned how to prepare, was a white sauce.
Right.
Just a gravy made with flour, refined white flour, hello everybody, butter, mm-hmm. animal saturated fat, not healthy, and water.
Right. Wow. That's like a heart attack waiting to happen.
Exactly. So
now a lot of people like to smother their food in gravies and have them be thick and creamy and salty. And we have a lot of recipes that you can make a gravy, but it's not going to clog your arteries.
Exactly.
It's going to actually help you unclog your arteries. But you'll think you'll be eating something that is far more rich and fattening and creamy than it really is. And,
yeah, there's nothing wrong with gravy. If gravy is made with whole minimally processed foods, creamy break gravy can made with like a cashew cream, which thickens up so quickly.
Right. Or exactly.
I made a gravy last week with red lentils.
Exactly. It's safe to say that you can get all of those great tasting things that you've always had, starting with when you were a Girl Scout making a white sauce, a white gravy, a bechamel, I guess is what they probably were thinking, which is one of the basic sauces. And we do have a bechamel online at Responsible Eating and Living. As a matter of fact, it's delicious, and it can be made simply by doing the basic steps of what you just outlined: soaking some cashews, blending them up in a blender or a Vitamix, which I think a Vitamix is an essential tool in anyone's kitchen, because we're going to talk a lot about how you can make these creamy dressings and these creamy gravies by using, like, for example, we do this thing called seed Caesar dressing, which is really a thick mayonnaise-y type dressing, a really very close to a Caesar dressing, only a Caesar mayo. And we do it just by blending up pumpkin seeds with a clove of garlic, some vinegar, some nutritional yeast, maybe a touch of miso, and you've got this, you know, a little couple of grinds of pepper. You've got this most amazing creamy dressing that you can smother all over, and it's just basically pumpkin seeds.
I know, it's amazing.
That's what it is. Yep. It's pumpkin seeds. And so it's got all the fiber, and it has, and you know, you put a little dash of mustard in there. It's amazing. And it's so easy if you have a blender or a Vitamix. I'm getting really excited about this, but but I know a lot of people are like, well, I have to have white, thick, creamy stuff to put on my food. Sure, and you can have it, but it just doesn't have to, you know, it's not going to kill you. It's actually going to make you healthier. Think about that.
Let's talk about appliances, since you jumped ahead of our outline and went right into appliances, but I think it's important. Mm-hmm. We've been traveling, as you mentioned, and we've been in different spaces where we've had an efficiency little kitchen, and then we're in a place right now with just an amazing kitchen. Sometimes we have the tools, sometimes we don't, but we've still been able to eat pretty healthfully if you follow the What Vegans Eat blog and see what we've been eating. It's all there. Let's talk about appliances, the good, the bad, the expensive, but oh so worth it.
Right. Well, again, I'll just start by saying the Vitamix. I think the Vitamix is an amazing tool, and it can really do a lot for you in so many different ways. Making pancake batter, for example, in a Vitamix is – I mean, we make a lot of gluten-free pancake batters and waffle batters and things like that. And so when you have a powerful blender like that, it really does make the batter so much more – wonderful.
So let me just say here that we've used a conventional blender for a very long time, and it was only recently that we got a Vitamix. And there are most of the recipes we have you can use with a regular blender. It will take longer. You'll have mm-hmm. to chop a little more. You'll have to help the blender along, pulsing a lot. And you may need to add more liquid to get things moving.
Absolutely. And a Vitamix is expensive.
Vitamix is expensive. But I really think if you can get one. The refurbished ones are available, which were a little less expensive, and they're just as good as the new ones.
Oh, absolutely.
We did have the opportunity to try a BlendTec, another high-powered blender, and I have to say I didn't like it as much as Vitamix. How about you, Gary?
No, I didn't. I didn't like it as much as Vitamix. Now, the refurbished Vitamix with the speed dial and the two switches, it's very basic. I mean, it's not – there isn't a computerized a digital board with – I mean, it's basically just a switch. So you're not going to get all of the little buttons and LED readouts. It's going to just be your basic turn it on and change the speed and turn it off. So there's some skill involved in operating something manual. You do have to read the instructions, because you can't just turn it on and not know where your speed is set. It's not going to be childproof. So it's an industrial machine. It's the same thing that you – I don't know if anybody walks into Starbucks and watches them – blend their drinks, but it's the same thing Starbucks uses to blend a smoothie, a coffee drink that has a lot of sugar and bad things in it for you, but that you can't resist. So you can make your own smoothies at home, your own coffee drinks at home, and they're going to be healthy and lovely and delicious, and they're not going to kill you.
That's right.
And And speaking of smoothies, my nephew Zachary is starting to get into making his own smoothies, health smoothies, and it's really wonderful to watch him. And he puts in a lot of kale and a lot of greens and things, and he just really he tests this thing to the limits. And it's still operating. And I'm telling you, he puts like an entire head of kale in, and he'll put in like pieces of large pieces of root vegetables like carrots and just all kinds of things, and blends it up and drinks it because he's really into health and fitness. And it's I've seen him torture that Vitamix, and it just kind of laughs.
It laughs at it. Yeah, but yeah. He's looking amazing. We've really seen the difference in his look and his skin and his glow since he started eating vegetables.
Right. And, you know, he's not a vegan per se, but he eats a lot of vegan meals. And so, and it's really showing. It's showing tremendously well. But my point in bringing up my nephew was the fact that I've watched him now since we've been here in Northern California work this Vitamix to its limits, and yeah. it holds up really well.
So more about appliances. We like food processors, like the Cuisinart food processor. The larger, the better, and I'll tell you why. I was visiting with two old friends of mine, one I met in junior high school and one I met in high school. The three of us decided to get together. The three of us together haven't been together in a really long time. I've seen both of them individually. And one of them recommended that we pick some of Reel's recipes and we would make them for lunch.
Yeah.
What I didn't realize is the host, who is a lovely person and very smart, and she's had a great engineering career. She's a great mom. She is lost in the kitchen. I had no idea. And her husband seems to make all the meals that they make at home. She's okay with breakfast, but otherwise they eat out. And she's been working at getting healthier. She's eating a mostly vegan diet. And we were making this kale salad that I didn't think it was very complicated, but we started preparing a little ground parsley and ground cilantro for the salad, and then chopping a little onion, mincing a little garlic, and it was taking a very long time. And then this particular recipe, which you came up with, Gary, where you put the kale in a food processor and pulsed it a little bit, which quickly chopped it.
Right.
She didn't have a big food processor. She just had one of those little mini choppers.
Right.
So the mini chopper was really helpful in mincing the garlic and the herbs and the onions.
Right.
But I ended up manually chopping the kale. I didn't want her doing it because everything was taking a really long time, and I knew that we wanted to sit down and have lunch.
Right, right. But so you manually chopped the kale with a kitchen knife.
I did.
Yeah. But, you know, that's a skill that you should really learn first before you go crazy. So with appliances, because learning how to work with your knives is really an essential and a key step. Now, if you don't have time to take a cooking class to learn how to use knives, or you don't have, you know, you just don't have the desire to do it, then I would suggest getting a very large Cuisinart that's going to do the chopping for you. But take the time to get to know your knives in the kitchen. I mean, if people buy all of these big blocks of knives and they don't even know what they're for. So,
yeah.
You know how I learned how to cook and how to. I didn't go to any expensive cooking school, and I watched PBS. I learned how to cook from a very young age and cutting school when I was in elementary school and watching Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet, use his. So, I mean, it's out there. It's on YouTube now. You can, and there's tons of cooking shows. I wouldn't suggest starting with a Food Network show because they really stopped teaching people how to cook. But if you could find some
entertainment.
Yeah, but if you could find some old food shows where they actually do teach you how to use a chef's knife,
Yeah, you could just Google how to use a on YouTube, how to use knives, how to use a chef's knife, how to chop an onion.
Right.
You'll learn quickly.
Right. The tools are out there for you. You don't need to take any classes. Although I know a lot of sur la table and a lot of different cookware stores, retailers have cooking classes now. And I don't know if they have a basic how to use your knives class, but that's not really important.
Okay. Here's a ridiculous analogy. Okay. Cars, driving an automobile. Most people think this is essential. Okay, it's not that essential for some of us who don't own cars and we live in big cities and we use mass transportation. But cars are great. But you have to have a driver's license first. You have to learn how to drive the car.
Exactly.
Learn the rules of the road. It's not any different in the kitchen. You need to learn how to use your tools.
Right. And you need to learn how to drive your kitchen. I mean, I know that you want to talk about, and I don't want to jump ahead, but you want to talk about how to organize your kitchen and the different kitchens that we've lived in on this trip to California have, everybody has their own method of organizing their kitchens. And so that's a personal touch. That's your own personal touch. The key word, I guess, would be to organize it on how you would like to have things available for you at your fingertips. And that's really important, to at least take the time to organize your kitchen so that it works with you instead of against you. And the way you do that is just by experimenting with cooking a meal. And I always think that it's a meditative process when you cook. I think that cooking is meditation, and it's very relaxing for me. A lot of people, maybe one of your best friends that you just cooked with in her kitchen, maybe cooking is really stressful and not at all enjoyable. And so maybe that's why her husband does it. And that's cool. I mean, some people just have tried it and they just don't get it. They don't understand it. And it's usually people that aren't, really that into eating. You have to admit, you and I are really into eating. And I think put a lot of focus on eating.
I know people that love eating and don't know how to cook, and I know people that love eating and do know how to cook. So it doesn't necessarily correlate. But I just wanted to say before I forget, because I typically forget, we are open for calls if you have any burning questions about working in the kitchen. You're free to ask us. We're right here for you. The number is 1-888. I always forget this, right? 1-888-874-4888. Again, 1-888-874-4888. If you don't ask us, that's your loss. Here's your opportunity.
Yeah, I like the choice of words too. If you have a burning question about cooking, if you have a burning question about burning food. And believe me, we've all burned food.
And there's ways to salvage a lot of mistakes and burned food, which everyone's done.
Right. A while ago we did this piece at Responsible Eating and Living that we put together called January Dishes. We did it at the beginning of the year, January 7th, 2016. And it's got to be relabeled, because it's really just 12 steps on how you can organize your kitchen with respect to the essential ingredients that are going to make a bunch of dishes from all of these 12 basics. So if you Google that on our site, not Google it, if you search for that on our site, you'll see vegetable stock is number one, tomato sauce is number two, tofu is number three, tempeh is number four, greens number five, roots number six, flour number seven, grains number eight, miso number nine, dried goods number 10, 11 is nuts and seeds, and 12 is legumes, pulses, and beans. And again, it's called January Dishes, but those 12 basics in the plant-based kitchen are really a great place for you to start to get to know these items, and it kind of gives you a brief rundown. Vegetable stocks, for example, you can add vegetable stock to a lot of your savory dishes. Instead of water, it makes them richer, it makes them more flavorful. A vegetable stock can also be made into a soup immediately. You can freeze it. It lasts a long time in the freezer. Same thing with tomato sauce. A lot of people are afraid of tofu. But don't be afraid of tofu. Tofu is not going to give you cancer. It's not going to do all of the – soy is not going to do all the horrible things that a lot of people are frightening you into thinking it's going to do. If you don't believe me, watch a program that we produced here at Responsible Eating Living called Soy Story. You know, it's a takeoff on Toy Story. But it's on the website. It talks to you all about, it talks about all of the misinformation that you get about soy. And Karen has done a lot of research on soy. And so she talks to you about how not to be afraid of soy.
So, all right. So in summary, I want to say that we've covered appliances, and we recommend a large food processor and good knives, learning how to use them, a Vitamix if you can afford it. It's really wonderful. Otherwise, you know, a blender can do the trick. Some great cutting boards.
Right.
And then, you know, you're good to go. Of course, measuring cups and measuring spoons are helpful. Some really good stainless steel bowls to do your mixing in.
Right.
Some basic stainless steel pots.
Let's talk about stainless steel a minute and why we're saying stainless steel as opposed to like the kind of pots and pans that you would maybe have a nonstick surface on.
Mm.
A nonstick surface comes off. And yeah, they tell you to use plastic when you use a nonstick surface, but I don't want to cook with plastic, and I don't want to cook with anything that's been sprayed onto a pan that's going to come off. I don't care what they've told me. And so stainless steel is the way to go. And they're going to be a little more expensive. And no, don't use aluminum pots and pans. Don't use cast aluminum. You're going to see a lot of really fancy-looking pots that are made with cast aluminum, and they're going to tell you that they're perfectly fine. Don't believe them. They're not fine. Use stainless steel. And again, it's going to be a little more expensive. You're not going to be able to find it on sale at, well, you might be able to, but
yeah,
not as,
there are some sales.
Not as readily available on sale as some of the aluminum, cast aluminum.
Oh, sure.
Pans. But, you know, look around for it. And again, stainless steel lasts forever. So if you can find
exactly.
a set that's been refurbished, that's okay. You can buy a refurbished set of stainless steel. And anyway, that's my...
Yes.
That's
take
my...
care and take care of all these things.
Right.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit before about organizing the kitchen, and a lot of people are concerned about making food quickly. People work all day. People have kids. They're busy. They're tired. Making healthy food seems intimidating, and it just seems like very time intensive. And this is where organization is so important, because if you have a kitchen that is thoughtfully planned out, things are, you know where things are and they're accessible and clean and neat and ready to go when you're ready to make food, that makes a big difference. So one of the first things I recommend is you want to keep your kitchen clean. And mm-hmm. I like to clean up as I'm making food. And this is something that takes practice. But if you're cleaning while you're preparing, then the cleanup is that much faster.
Right.
I also like to make sure the kitchen is clean before going to bed.
Right.
For a number of reasons. I mean, we live in an apartment building and, you know, we're never going to get rid of all the cockroaches, but we don't like them in our kitchen, and we don't want to give them any opportunity to visit. So our kitchens are clean before.
We don't want them to come over to our apartment.
No, we don't.
But a lot of times when you live in an apartment building, and I think it's important to bring this up, and you all have had this happen to you, I'm sure, those of you that live in apartment buildings. If an exterminator comes to the apartment next door, those little roaches are going to go to your apartment. So it always pays, now, especially if you're someone that doesn't want any toxic poisons in your kitchen, to understand the non-toxic ways to keep the vermin and the roaches out. So invest some time into searching out ways of doing that. I'm not going to give you any of my ways, because I don't really have any other than boric acid. And I know if you have children or pets, boric acid is not a good thing to spread around. But there are different ways you can do that. And I don't really know of any ways off the top of my head. But if you think of something, let us know and we'll share it with our listeners.
Yeah, so when you get up in the morning and you want to get your breakfast going or any other time in the day, it's really difficult if you're approaching a kitchen that needs to be cleaned up. You want to give yourself the gift of a clean kitchen so that when you're ready to make food, everything's clear, counters are clear, sink is empty, you're ready to start making food.
Yeah, it's really important to empty the garbage every night and do all of the things that you're taking for granted. But someone out there might not think, well, I could leave the dishes soaking in the in the sink overnight, or I could leave them setting in the dishwasher. I could leave the garbage until the morning. But really, and we're talking basically about people who are living in apartment buildings, these are the things that you can do to keep your kitchen clean. And clean as you go, as Karen said. You always should clean as you go. And before you start a new meal, make sure that the counter is clean from the last meal. And if you're a vegan, you're never going to have to worry about disinfecting your cutting boards like you have to do when you cut flesh, chicken, and things like that. But if you aren't a vegan, you really do have to be careful about all of the things that you cut on your cutting boards, because that's how people die. And that's what stopped me from going in. You know, I don't like going into non-vegan restaurants anymore and ordering vegan food. I'm not being a snob or smug about this, but I've worked in restaurants. I've owned restaurants. I've seen what go on in kitchens. No matter how clean your kitchen staff is, no matter, you know, how wonderful they are and how well they take care of your kitchens for you in restaurants, there's still going to be some disease. And I really feel this way, and I don't have any facts to back this up with, but I think a lot of the things that people say, I think a lot of the flu is not the flu at all. I think it's food poisoning. And so whether you're at home or at a restaurant, if you, the next day, if you're not feeling well, think about what you ate or how you prepared that, because it may not be the flu. It may be food poisoning.
Foodborne illness. Bum, bum.
So it's really important to keep clean, to be impeccably clean in the kitchen. And that's the first thing on my list. So when you're organizing your kitchen, when you're organizing your cabinets, make sure you take cleanliness into consideration.
All right. So another thing that some people don't think about, because it's not necessarily obvious, is what you store around the stove. If you're using the stove, if you're not a raw foodist, and if you're into cooking, the stove gets hot and that heat spreads, and it can spread into the cabinets around the stove. I remember growing up, my mom used to keep the spice rack on top of the stove on a nice little shelf. And those spices and herbs got hit with a dose of heat every time the stove or the oven were used. Spices should be stored way far away from the stove in a cool, dark place. They can last a year or two or more if they are kept in tightly sealed containers in a cool, dry place.
Right. Very important. And go ahead, Karen.
We love using herbs and spices. They're very nutritious. Some of them have remarkable anti-cancer fighting properties. They give so much flavor to the food. You don't need to cook with salt. You can cook with herbs and spices. And we love them, and we like to have a big variety of them. We buy them in bulk, so they're less expensive, in the one-pound bags sometimes, quarter-pound bags. They're much cheaper than buying in the little 2-ounce variety. And this way we have all of them ready to go for anything. But we keep them in tins that are well sealed in a cool, dark drawer. Oh, actually, they're not in the drawer anymore. They're in a cool, dark place between cabinets.
Right. And so when you go to, and again, it really does help you. Because I think a lot of reasons people kept their spices above the stove was because they were kind of making it as up as they went along. And so they were thinking, okay, what can I add to this? So they want it in front of them so they can just toss it in as they're cooking it. But if you plan ahead, you can bring a small dish over to your spice area. You can put your spices in your small dish and mix it up. We use a mortar and pestle, and we put our spices in there. And then you bring it over to the stove, already measured out, and then you just add it to your dish. It makes life so much easier in the long run.
Yeah, just a little planning, right?
And plus, when that spice rack is above your stove, it gets all, you know, greasy and dirty, and your spices get all contaminated with other stuff. And just keep them on the side and deal with it.
Just deal with it.
Huh. Yeah.
Now, another thing I like to mention, I'm really into the Pyrex bowls that come with covers. And they come in all different sizes, half cup, 1 cup, 2 cup, 4 cup, 7 cup, and so on. They come round, they come square, they come rectangle. And I really recommend using them for storage and then for presenting at the table and for reheating in. They are so versatile. I just go nuts over them. I don't like using plastic. We've been using a lot more plastic on the road because we're fortunately able to be visiting with people who are welcoming us into their kitchens, and we use what is available.
Right.
But what I wanted to bring up here are the covers. So often we can't find the right cover to fit the right bowl or the right container. I say plan ahead and keep them all in the same place. You can neatly stack the covers by size. You can neatly stack the containers in a certain way, but know where they are so that when you look for them, they're where you want them to be. And when you're cleaning up and putting them away, you know where they're supposed to go.
Right. I mean, we're a little, you know, this is our life's work, preparing food. So we're going to be a little over the top. Some of you are going to be listening to us and you're going to be saying, oh, I don't have time for that, or that's way too much trouble. But yeah, we could be a little like the, remember the old Saturday Night Live sketch, Phil Hartman, God rest his soul, one of the funniest and most creative and most brilliant actor, comedians alive, is no longer alive, ended his life ended tragically, but he used to do this character called the anal retentive chef, I think. And we are seriously bordering on Mr. Hartman's creation. So, you know, we're going to give you the extremes here. You need to find the balance that works for you. But organizing your drawers is a really important thing to do. And it doesn't really take that long when you think about it. And then you always know where it's supposed to go. Sure, this is stuff that you're saying to yourself now. Yeah, duh, Gary. I mean, that's obvious. But you really don't think about it. We've been into a lot of kitchens. And I guess they work for the people that work in them. But as far as a method to the madness, again, I'll point out that it really is up to you, but lids and storing the containers with the lids is a really great thing. And Karen mentioned Pyrex. Pyrex has a set of bowls out that have color-coordinated lids, and glass is preferred over plastic in our kitchen, but the lids are also plastic, but the lids are the only things that are plastic. So, and they go
They're
perfectly.
Actually, some of the lids are silicone.
Silicone, right. And that they're genius. These Pyrex bowls are genius. And the lid, it's great. So you just take the lid off and you truly can just serve it in the bowl that it comes in. It's attractive, and it's not like serving it in one of these Glad plastic things that they're trying to sell you at grocery stores that they think replace Tupperware, but they really don't replace Tupperware because they don't last that long. Tupperware lasted, I think it was made out of bowling ball rubber, so it lasted like forever.
Well, actually, Tupperware is plastic, and it does leach, and I don't recommend using plastic.
No, I'm not saying you recommend it. I'm just saying that it lasted forever, and this other stuff.
It did. It lasts much more than these Ziploc and Glad storage containers that you can buy in the store.
But we don't want anything to do with any of that stuff anymore. That's why we use Pyrex. Good old Pyrex. I think it's like the greatest thing in the world. You can microwave in it. We don't use a microwave either, but you could bake it in the oven. You can put it in the freezer, and it works terrific.
Gary, anyway. You mentioned that when you are in the kitchen, you find a sort of relaxing zen.
Right.
And many people find stress in the kitchen, and that's why I think it's really important to organize and plan ahead. That will really reduce stress, because every time you think you want to make a new recipe, you want to try something, you're finding yourself in the kitchen again, you're giving yourself another chance, and you get frustrated instantly because the recipe says you need this and you can't find it, and you need something else and you can't find it, and you're looking around, and it's very frustrating and very stressful.
Right. And I think that it's not only a zen-like experience for me to be in the kitchen, but it's also a great workout. You could wear one of these step counters on your wrists or Fitbits or whatever while you're working in the kitchen, and it really can take the place of your workout, because you're always moving when you're cooking a meal for your family or for yourself. And I have counted thousands of steps at the end of a meal, prepping a meal, and you know, just try it. You know, a good time to try it is Thanksgiving when you're making Thanksgiving dinner, because it's like you probably get in 10,000 steps. And if you think of it as you know, this food that you're making for yourself is going to help keep, it's going to help make you live a long, happy, healthy life. And while you prepare it, you're going to stay in great physical shape. So it's a win-win if you're adopting a healthier lifestyle and you're getting to know your kitchen better than you've ever known it before. You're going to be keeping in shape both physically, and you're going to be nourishing your body with great food. And as Karen always says on this program, you're worth it. You're worth this kind of extra effort. You're worth getting back into your kitchen and learning more about it. Again, I can't stress enough, going out and eating in a restaurant is lovely on the surface. You're being waited on, somebody's serving your food, and you know, you're eating this meal that you think tastes wonderful, but you have no idea what's going into your food. You have no idea how much fat is in there, or salt or sugar, to get it to taste that way. And yeah, we go out to dinner and we have a lovely time and we treat ourselves, there's only so many a few restaurants that we completely trust that has our interest at heart. And but most of them are just there, you know, they're a business and they want to get you in there and get you to eat their food. And so they're going to deep fry it and they're going to do all these crazy things that you're going to absolutely go back for, because that stuff is addicting. You know, salt, sugar, and fat it's an addictive property just like anything else.
Okay, so I want to talk about getting started in the kitchen and the foods that you might make. And I think it's really a great thing to start with making salads and salad dressings. It doesn't even require any cooking, but it will help develop your chopping skills, which you can ultimately extend to and expand to cooking dishes. But making salad, some people complain that it's very time consuming, and it's because you need an organized kitchen, you need to plan, and you need to have a few skills right at your fingertips.
Right. Yeah. Now, and I'm going to push back a little bit on these salads in a bag that a lot of people are using, where they say it's already pre-mixed, just open the bag and toss it in there and put your favorite bottled dressing on it. I'm going to say don't do that. I'm going to say learn how to clean a head of lettuce. Start with learning how to clean a head of lettuce. Start with getting a head of romaine. knowing how to chop off the bottom of it, pull the leaves off of this, off of the bottom of the head, wash each leaf individually, dry, pat those leaves dry, or get yourself a salad spinner, get the water out, and then make a seed Caesar dressing and toss it in there with some tomato and avocado. It's going to change your life. And make sure it's an organic head of lettuce.
Can we just talk about the romaine that we had last night as compared to the romaine you get in one of those bags?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. If you go into a good grocery store that has a nice organic vegetable section and get a big muscular head of romaine like we got at Staff of Life in Santa Cruz. I mean, I think Karen said it last night. Staff of Life is – we would move to Santa Cruz if we could just so we could be near Staff of Life. It's like the greatest grocery store I've ever been to. And there's a few others around. I know New Leaf Market in Santa Cruz is also an amazing grocery store. And I used to think this way about Whole Foods, but Whole Foods is now kind of shifting into some other place. I don't know quite what. I mean, they took out their fresh juice bar in a couple of the Whole Foods, and I just can't abide by that. Anyway, but a muscular head of romaine lettuce is amazing. And you add an avocado to that, sliced tomato, and some of my seed Caesar dressing, it's going to change your life. It's going to be the greatest thing you've ever
made. So the bags of salad that are pre-washed and ready to go, if you're going from eating a mostly animal product diet, sure, these pre-washed bags of salad are a much better option. But you want the best for you, the best for you and your family, the best flavor, the freshest. Those pre-washed salads in the bag have been made – the bags are filled with carbon dioxide and some other gases in order to keep them fresher longer. So you don't know how old they are. You don't know when they were harvested. And they taste that way. They just don't taste as good.
Right.
So the fresher, the better. Farmers markets, grow your own, whatever – fresher is better.
Yeah. And, you know, again, we're going on ad nauseum about this, and I'm sure many of you out there are like, oh gosh, this is just old news. But, you know, you have to understand that these things need to be – we need to keep saying these because we're going to slip back into these habits of saying, oh, it's just going to be so much easier for me to buy that big plastic box of $5 organic mixed greens at Safeway or where, you know, you see them now. They have the big $5 label on them and it's organic. And
we buy them. We do. We use them.
It's in a plastic box. But then you have to think about the plastic box is contaminating this lettuce. Lettuce that you have no idea how long it's been sitting there. So we have to keep pushing ourselves to not fall into the trap of the plastic box or the plastic bag because it's just so much cooler to get the big muscular head of romaine from a reputable market that buys from local growers and local organic growers.
The greens are really important, and you want them to be fresh, and you want them to taste good. That's what makes a salad good. But let's talk about all the other things that we add to a salad to make it more nutritious, but make it also delicious. And the first thing is the dressing. And you mentioned our seed Caesar dressing. So the idea is that rather than using oil, because oil is not a healthy food, olive oil is not a healthy food. It contains no fiber. It's a processed food. It's just a lot of calories. I love a good olive oil. Okay, don't get me wrong. And occasionally I indulge, but I don't make a habit of it. Salad dressings should be made with a fat and an acid like vinegar or citrus. And the fat can come from whole foods, seeds, raw nuts and seeds, avocado, coconut. If you can soak your nuts and seeds, all the better. They'll be more nutritious and they'll be more easy to blend.
Right. And again, this is a fact. So essentially what you're doing is, if you have a Cuisinart or, I mean, a blender or a Vitamix, you're making your own oil, but you're making it with at the source, and you're keeping the fiber with the oil. You're not pressing the oil out of the seeds or the nuts. You're actually getting the entire whole food, but you're still getting that oil that you love the taste of so much, and you're pulverizing it to the point where it's becoming this thick, wonderful dressing, and you think it's very mayonnaise-like, but in reality, it's nothing like mayonnaise because it's got all of the goodness. But it's gonna fool you, and it's so easy to make.
Yeah. So then you've got your dressing, and you can make a dressing that lasts for 3 or 4 days if you make enough of it and chill it in the refrigerator. They don't last forever, and that's intentional, and that can be frustrating because I know bottled dressings have artificial preservatives in them that allow them to last for months or years. I've seen bottles of salad dressing that have been in some people's refrigerators for years.
Right.
That shouldn't be.
And even a lot of vegan dressings are doing that too.
Oh, I mean, too.
A lot of horrible things in that.
And then you add to your salad whatever you like. A little chopped raw onion is very nutritious and not too much, just enough. You can add any kind of cooked bean, legumes, makes it very filling and satisfying. In the summer when the fruit is just sweet and delicious and ripe, I like to add a little fresh fruit to the salad, either some chopped pear or some fresh berries, some citrus. It makes it really fun and exciting.
Right. You know, another thing that's really fun to do in the summer, and Karen has interviewed the author of the book. Who is the author about the tomato book, Karen? One of our first videos that we did about the Tomato Land.
Right.
The author of Tomato Land.
I'm going to Google that.
He was talking with Karen once and said that you eat all of these things during the summer when they're readily available, and then you eat so much of them that you really don't want them in the winter when they're not available. And I picked up on that, and you know how we can get produce in the grocery store 12 months out of the year. We can get ripe tomatoes, and we can get all of these
strawberries.
But they're never as good as they are when you can get them in season from local growers.
Barry Estabrook.
Barry Estabrook. And that's interesting because tomatoes are berries. So that's a great way to remember Barry's name. But you know what would be fun is at the end of the year during the harvest, not the end of the year, but the end of the summer when the harvest comes, is to get back into the kitchen and make your own tomato sauce and learn how to bottle your own tomato sauce and your own strawberry preserves and things of that nature. If you don't have the time to do that, we have an amazing recipe for a apricot preserve that is just made with dried apricots. That's it. No sugar.
Unsulfured, organic.
Dried apricots.
Dried apricots, the easiest thing, and you can do it with prunes, you can do it with raisins, you can do it with a lot of different dried fruits, so you can have them in your cupboard as dried fruit all the time, and then when you want some jam, you just add a pound of fruit, dried fruit, to 3 cups of water in a saucepan, boil it up, and then put it in your blender carefully, because it's hot, you can let it cool. Blend it up, put it in jars, and you've got a fantastic jam that has no sugar added.
It's really unbelievable. I am not kidding you guys. Listen, I'm talking to you, the person out there like me who likes to put jam on everything. This is the way to do it, okay? So to get our recipe for apricot butter, I think we call it, and you can adapt it to whatever dried fruit you like, or mix the fruits and do your own mixture.
Is an example of a very simple recipe. Now, some people would think, oh my God, this is so complicated. Make my own jam. You get into the habit of making these things, you realize they're not complicated. And then you can have a supply of basics
Yeah.
That you're using all the time. That's what we do.
Can you boil water? Then if you can boil water, then you can throw dried apricots in the boiling water, let it cook till it gets really soft, throw it in a blender after it cools so you don't burn yourself, and blend it up and pour it in jars and keep it in your refrigerator, and use it on everything. And it's terrific. It's really great. I put it on my oatmeal. I put it on my spaghetti. No, I don't think I put it on my spaghetti. But I would if you let me.
So, Gary, you know, I can't believe it, but once again, we just have a few minutes left. We've managed to talk away the last hour pretty easily.
Great.
So I hope you don't mind me mentioning, but next week there will not be an It's All About Food new program. I'm taking the week off, and the reason is that particular day we are actually premiering a reading of a new play that Gary wrote called Bad Hemingway by the Bay, and I'm very excited about it.
Thanks for the plug. Yes, it's a private reading. It's the first reading we'll ever do. It's with an invited audience, and hopefully they won't leave before it's over. So we can
and
get
you know
some
what's
comments.
Funny about it? The play actually is about food.
Yeah.
So I can bring it up on this show because it is about food.
It is about food and other things. But
yeah.
It's about food.
It is about food. You know, and I wanted to mention that, but there's a number of other things that I didn't get to that I wanted to talk about, which always happens on this program. And I have a minute left, so maybe I should hold off and save these for another time.
Yeah,
I think
so. Good night, everybody. Goodbye.
Thanks for joining me, Gary.
Thanks for joining me, Karen. Talk to you later.
Talk to you really soon. All right,
bye-bye.
Well, that's another It's All About Food show that has come to a close. I hope you join me at ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com, and you can follow our travels with food during our three-month stay here in Northern California, Bay Area, at my blog, What Vegans Eat, now in day 537, where we made an incredible stack of corn cake pancakes. Have a delicious week. Bye-bye.